Welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly disc golf podcast. I'm Trevor, joined today by Connor.
Hey!
No Hunter in studio today because he is currently gone on a little vacay. We tried something a little bit different this week. Before I get into that, we're going to recap DDO. We're going to do a little Patreon question of the week. We got a little trivia, some other disc golf news such as Kono Piche that went down, some President's Cup news. So make sure to stay tuned for the whole show. We're doing a little different approach to the kind of remote show this time. A lot of times we'll like bring Hunter or myself in via video call and try and do that live. I think it's always a little complicated trying to like make that work, internet situation, just coordinating our schedules. Also, Hunter's like on vacation. So that's a little bit tricky. So we're trying a new thing this time where when we get into the recap, Hunter's going to kind of give his takes first. We'll cut to that he recorded. I've watched that recording, so I'm not going to just regurgitate what he said. And then I'm going to kind of give my recap of DDO as well. So it'll kind of be like separate, but a little more cohesive on their own. And then I'll kind of finish up with some other disc golf news as well. But hey, now if you only like listening to either Hunter or myself, this is your dream come true. And if you really don't like that, I'm sorry, and you can let us know. But this is just something new that we are trying. So appreciate you guys sticking with us and learning how to do podcasts the right way together. That's our goal. Trying out new things.
The People's Podcast.
Yeah, the People's Podcast. We want to know what you like to see. But before we get into any of that, we're going to start off, Connor and I, with our Patreon question of the week. If you have no idea what I'm talking about right now, basically we have what is called our Heiser Club. It's a Patreon program. Where they get some exclusive things such as a weekly podcast where we do a Q&A. They ask all the questions, we answer them all, and we pick one of those questions to be our Patreon question of the week on Griplock. If you want to check that out, you can get a free 30-day trial. Go to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can check it out. It's pretty awesome. This question comes from David Merrill, and he says, my question this week has to do with the future of disc golf as a sport. Obviously, the future and the growth of the sport is something the Foundation talks about a good amount. At the end of the day, though, there's got to be a point where the dream/vision of the sport could be meets reality. So in each of your opinions, what does a realistic ceiling of disc golf look like, and what do you think the road to get there will look like? I'm talking overall purse amounts, exposure to the larger sports world, depth of coverage, level of outside sponsorship, etc. So the way that I kind of interpret this question, this is a good question because a lot of times we do talk about like the development of disc golf, and we talk about it in a way that like there is no ceiling or like eventually, like in a certain amount of time, this will happen. When it's like, you know, we don't like, of course, if you give any sport enough time, things can probably happen with it. But mm-hmm. The way I kind of interpret this is like, where will it be in my lifetime? Like, where can disc golf, what kind of heights can it reach? And starting with the purse, I think the purses have a lot of work to do, but I do think we can get to the point in my lifetime where we're seeing $200,000, $300,000 purses for pro tours. Pro tour winners are taking home, you know, maybe 30 grand or maybe like some of the bigger ones, 50 grand. I could see the, you know, the biggest purse of the year. I think there could be $1 million purse in our sport in my lifetime. You know, if enough people get behind it and fund it, I think that's, and I think we could definitely see our first six figure prize. I think the tour championship is already kind of on its way towards that. I think that's probably a big goal there. So I could definitely see those things happening. But ultimately, what we really want are those consistent purse amounts that's going to come from outside sponsorship. And that's kind of like the slower track of growth, is just like continuing to try and get more eyeballs. I think that, you know, just from the sport and not the business, like disc golf will, I think, continue to grow a ton on just how many people are playing it, probably surpass a lot of other sports just because it's so accessible. But that doesn't always translate directly to converting them into viewers and consumers of the professional scene. It definitely helps. I think as far as like coverage, I could see us getting to a point where maybe we can be on ESPN Plus for like the pro tour events more consistently. There's a lot of hurdles in broadcasting to get over before that would happen. And maybe, just maybe, we could get to the point where, like, in my lifetime, where like our biggest event of the year, whether that's Worlds or USDGC or whatever it could be, even if it's like the Tour Championship, is on a main network, like live. Not obviously, we've seen some stuff on main networks not live, but that's kind of like what I see. Whereas, like, so like it's definitely some serious growth, but nothing like too crazy. Because ultimately, yeah, like there's a lot of sports with hundreds of years of head start, or a lot more time than we've had. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. That's kind of where I'm at though.
Yeah, to kind of like touch on the part of the question where like how do we get there, I feel like I saw a really good view into how we get to that spot that Trevor's talking about in disc golf. Whenever we were on the West Coast Tour, whenever we were at Wild Horse in Vegas, I feel like the way that they treated disc golf there was, and you'll hear me use this word to describe it, which I think is a very descriptive way, and that is they treated disc golf with such dignity in the sense of it's on a golf course. It's a very, very nice golf property, a well-known golf property in the area, I believe, and it's not some kind of dingy golf course. They're like, oh, we might as well put a disc golf course here too. Like, it's legit. And they don't treat disc golf like the like shameful stepchild, like in the corner of the shop. They actually like they treat it like it is a professional part of their business. They have discs in the pro shop, bags, disc golf shoes. I mean, they've got Adidas Terex in the pro shop with the golf shoes, and it's not like super loud and tacky. It blends in really nice, and it's not just shoved in the corner. It's in the pro shop. And then in their trophy cases, they've got, you know, their important golf tournaments that are held there, the trophies in there. And in the same case right next to it, like next to the big golf trophy, is the disc golf, is the like one of the bigger disc golf trophies as well, in the same case. And they have a morning, an afternoon, and an evening course for the disc golfers, so that they're never crossing paths on fairways or anything. They're not being hit in on with balls, and the golfers aren't being thrown in on with discs. So the way that they treat disc golf there is a way that's going to convince other people in a professional sport such as golf to view disc golf with dignity as well. Yeah, I was just so impressed with the way that I believe they're changing the view of disc golf. And that's not getting rid of the rec part of it. I think disc golf is always going to have a rec following, and that's great. There's always going to be parks that have par threes on them that you can go out there with whatever DX disc you have a great time. I don't think that that's ever going to go away. But in order to grow the sport, I think that we just can improve on the professional view of it being a real sport. Because right now it is a very rec thing, but there is a very good competitive side of disc golf as well. I think the way that we build that is the way that Wild Horse is kind of changing the view of disc golf to the rest of athletics, which I just think is really cool how they did that. I was super impressed the whole time we were there on the way that they treated disc golf. So I think that's a good step of like the way that disc golf is viewed, can very much impact what it's, you know, what its future is going
to
hold.
Well, and I mean, there's no doubt that converting golfers to disc golf, or even not converting but opening them up to that, will always be a part of the sport's growth, mm-hmm. because it's just an easy audience to pull from. They're already interested in a similar sport.
So that
was our Patreon question of the week. Thanks again, David, for asking that. We always have great questions over there. Make sure to check out the Heiser Club, probably linked in the description if you want to check that out, free trial. Now we are going to hop into Hunter's takes on DDO first, and then like I said, it'll jump into my kind of recap of DDO as well, adding some additional points, maybe going a little more in-depth. Hunter's a little more abridged version. And then I'll also have a few more recap items after that, such as Kono Piche Day and the President's Cup teams. And then we will be back here with Trevor's Trivia. So let's
Trevor has already told me is going to be
one of the better ideas I've ever had, and has a lot of upside.
He doesn't tell me how it plays out. He just said you're going to love
it. I wouldn't lie if I hadn't said I had thought that before and been like, oh, that didn't work. We'll see. Let's turn it over to Hunter.
The Dynamic Disc Open did not go at all how I personally expected it to go. I don't think anyone really expected it to go the way it did. I'm going to start off by talking about the course. So I saw a lot of people not too happy with Emporia Country Club. It happens every time we go there. It's a golf course. It's like the truest golf course, in my opinion, that we play all season long. So it has, I think it's because we play down a lot of fairways, not across a lot. It also doesn't have a ton of woods on the side. So I think that kind of leads to it feeling a little more boring, a little more golf-esque. And in my opinion, I think it's a fine course. I don't think it's a great course. I think it's a course that needs a complimentary course. Problem is that complimentary course probably needs to be wooded. And I don't really think there's that much wooded golf in Emporia, even when we were at Jones Supreme last year. It's kind of a more park-style course. So, Emporia Country Club, three rounds in a row. I got to agree with the comments. It does get a little boring. What it does provide, though, is an electric finishing stretch. Specifically, really like 15, but on 16 and 18 are pretty electric. 17, could be electric. Not really, though. But 16 especially. Having an island hole during that final stretch, I think, is something that more disc golf courses, most disc golf courses, should consider. We saw it come into play in both FPO and MPO. Now, FPO, there was a lot of surprises, to be completely honest with you. First, Kristen Tatar did not win. That was one surprise. She did play solid enough that, you know, it's not like we need to freak out. Like, she's not her normal self, but she missed podium, and she didn't. She did her job, but not quite. So she was on chase guard final round, and she was setting a pace, but the pace she set, she kind of slowed up towards the end. The pace she set just wasn't enough to really push the lead card. But during the round, there's definitely times where you could feel Kristen's presence pushing the lead card. But the lead card had two main factors. First off, I guess I first need to talk about Ella Hansen coming into the tournament. I did not expect her to play well. I said this was a course you would expect Ella Hansen to play well at, but every course so far this season that I expected Ella Hansen to play well at, she hasn't. And I actually called Holland Handley the new Ella Hansen, which, funny enough, those two were two of the main ones in contention this weekend. So Ella Hansen was able to hang around, stay in there, but couldn't pull it off at the end. Holland Handley and Haley King are the two that really kind of came to the forefront. And this golf down the stretch was absolutely electric. Again, especially coming 16, 17, 18. So 16, Haley King has the tee. Having the tee on 16 at Emporia Country Club is such a big advantage. She steps up, puts it not just on the island, puts it very close to where you know she's a birdie putt. But why I think it's such a big advantage in this case is sometimes on an island hole or a tough hole or a tight green, going first can have its advantages and disadvantages. 16, I think going first is only an advantage because everyone's going for the island. There's not a layup option really on the table at all. So you're looking at the island, everyone's going for it. So going first, you don't have the pressure of the person you're fighting with already making it, and you're going for the island either way. So she steps up, puts it very close, boom, pressure's all on Holland Handley, steps up, leaves it short. Big pivotal turning moment. This gives Haley King a one-stroke lead. She obviously makes her birdie putt. Holland Handley doesn't get up and down. That was a very clutch play by Haley King. You get to hole 18. Haley King still has that one-stroke lead. It's a 417 or so foot. It's an absolute duck war going on behind me. It's 417, I believe, foot, par 4. Pause for a moment. I don't like this as a finishing hole for FPO. Where they have the tee, it's almost for the top level of the FPO game, a par 3. It's kind of a weird tweener hole, and I don't think it causes as electric of a finish as it could have. Now, with that being said, it did cause an electric finish, but I don't think the hole, I think the hole kind of got bailed out a little bit. I don't think the hole is as good as the finish it provided, if that makes sense. Holland Handley steps up. Haley King, first off, throws her drive to an eagle putt, circle 2, 6 inches from OB, a little deep, but she left the door open a little bit. Holland Handley now, this is the tournament, one shot. She has a chance to tie it up, possibly even win it, depending on what Haley King does. But pressure's on. Steps up. Beautiful. Hyzer flip. Laser beam. Puts it to like 10 feet, 5 feet even. I don't know. Very, very close. Very impressive shot. So this FPO tournament was a little different. Other FPO tournaments, Waco comes to mind. We've seen the leader kind of choke up a little bit and someone else start to overlap them, and it almost becomes like giving strokes to each other. This tournament, down the stretch, you had Haley King and Holland Handley taking strokes from each other, which is way more electric golf. So the FPO finish was, I think, in my opinion, the best tournament finish so far this year. You have Holland Handley, gets there. Now, what was very interesting is Haley King, again, has an eagle putt. She gives us this weird, soft bid. I respect her running it because, again, she's taken into her own hands, but she didn't feel, like, convicted about running it. It almost felt like she was like, we'll see if it goes in. Terrifying. It leaves her with, like, a 20-footer that she has to make to go to the playoff. Bangs it. After the round, we find out that, allegedly, she didn't know where she was at score-wise. I'm not even going to park on that. Awful decision. I don't understand how I said I wasn't going to park on it. I can't wrap my mind around a professional athlete, chance at winning not knowing where you're at going into the final two holes, three holes, anything like that. Blows my mind. Because now, though, with that in mind, her little half bid makes sense, because she's like, I might need to make this, I might not, I don't know, I'll just kind of toss it up there and see what happens. Also makes her comeback putt a little less impressive, because she apparently didn't know what it was for. Had she known where she was at, I'd like to see her decision making. From what I know of Haley King, I think she would have ran the piss out of that first putt and, you know, would have either been the tournament, she either won or lost it with that putt. End of the day, though, it doesn't matter. They go back to hole 16 for the playoff. Haley King again gets to go first, again puts it on the island. Holland Hanley again can't clutch up. So I also want to address, before we move on to MPO, people were talking about two main spit outs for Holland Hanley in that final round. Spit outs are part of the game to a certain extent. Some, yes, are very bad. But what you got to realize is everyone played on the same baskets. And you got to take the spit outs out of your mind. Holland Hanley had a chance to win it twice on 16. If she puts it close and taps out her birdie putt, it's over during the main round. Second round, if she puts it close, she pushes the playoff. So twice she lost it on 16. So she had two spit outs, one of which I think was worse than the other. I'm not going to say that they're bad putts. I'll leave that for someone else, but she had two spit outs, but she had two chances to take it into her own hands on hole 16. And you got to look more at hole 16, and she lost it there twice versus the spit outs. Spit outs are a part of the game to a certain extent. Yes, we should do what we can to eliminate it, but it'll never be perfect, because at the end of the day, everyone's throwing different putts. Different baskets are going to catch different putts. It is what it is. She had two chances to win on 16. Couldn't come through in the clutch on either. Still an impressive weekend for Holland Hanley, but a more impressive weekend and finish for Haley King. Now, speaking of impressive, MPO, obviously this is my shortened, abridged take on the tournament, so we're going to focus pretty much all of our focus on Parker Welk. If you don't know who he is, me either. This kid, I say kid, I think he's my age, 26. He kind of came out of nowhere. So I saw that he was in the lead in contention going to the final round, I guess. And I kind of was like, who is this kid? Who is this guy? Again, whenever I see a new name, I think kid, but who is this guy? I go over to his PGA and I quickly realized why I haven't heard of him. He hasn't really done anything. I mean, the only notable was like a top 20 at, I believe it was Waco. But other than that, I mean, a lot of like outside the top 50s, some top 50s, but they were talking like 43rd at LVC, I think it was. Not a lot of like super like, oh, wow, this kid's got future finishes. And then out of nowhere, he comes out this weekend and it just looked like he belonged. I mean, everything was on, especially his putting and some very clutch putts. The pivotal moment was he hit a pretty big putt. Well, considering the circumstances, a very big putt on hole 14. Calvin Heimberg bogeys. He hits a huge putt for eagle, three-stroke swing, and then ends up playing Calvin even the rest of the way to where Parker ends up winning by one. But again, that's hole 14. 15, 16, 17, 18. Again, I think 16 and 18 being the two key holes in that stretch. A lot can go wrong during that stretch. 16, this kid steps up. Again, I got to stop saying kid. He's my age. This guy steps up and throws a Anheuser stall shot. I love the shot choice. It is the most terrifying shot choice you could possibly choose, and in the biggest moment of his career so far, because hole 16 is pivotal. And he throws a Anheuser nose-up stall shot that just flexes. Why I like the shot choice is if you hit it right, which he did, then it eliminates the chance of like skipping, big flare skips OB. It works well with the wind and all. Like, there's a lot of good with the shot, but it is, in my opinion, on that island, probably the hardest shot you could choose to execute. I can't really think of too many harder. And he steps up, does it in the moment. Huge moment. He still has to hold on to a one-stroke lead for two more holes, but once you get through 16, you gotta breathe a sigh of relief, and he does it. I think he was ranked outside the top 120 in UDisc. I think he was like 122nd in UDisc coming into it. If you care about ratings, he was only like 10-10 rated. I don't care about ratings, but outside the top 120 to win, it was incredible. During his post-round interview, Terry Miller was asking him a few different questions, and he said that like one of his big motivators was he looked at the UDisc win percentage going into the final day, and UDisc gave him less than 1% chance to win, or 1% chance to win, and he felt kind of disrespected by that, so he turned it up, and I love that. That's incredible. Whether that's just fabrication for the interview, or that was actually his mindset going into it, I don't care either way. Electric, absolutely love that. I also loved during the interview, Terry was talking through and was like, was talking about obviously it was a pro tour win, so on and so forth. And then in it, he goes, you also just earned your 2024 tour card. What does this mean to you? Beautiful question there from Terry Miller. First off, love that. But it also, I think, showed like, yeah, the dude just won $8,000. In the grand scheme of things, that's a lot of money. In the grand scheme of sports, not a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of disc golf, a lot of money. Grand scheme of life, a lot of money. He just walked into basically $10,000. He also just won a pro tour. I'm sure there was a lot of bonuses with that from Prodigy, his sponsor. Shout out to Prodigy, by the way. They're able to scout out a lot of future talent. Alden Harris, Isaac Robinson, Gannon Burr. Now you have Parker Welk. Ezra Robinson is in that too. Prodigy's recruiting, I don't know if it's just they're spreading their net really wide and getting lucky. I don't think so. I think like twice is luck, but once is luck really. Twice is still kind of luck, but I mean they got like five. So at that point, it's not really luck anymore. Someone at Prodigy, probably Will Schuster, knows how to spot out talent. So props to Prodigy, but I'm sure he's getting a nice little bonus from them there. But on top of that, I think the big key here is earning a win on the pro tour now means a lot more than just the title and just the purse. Because what it also does is towards the tour championship, there's a spot reserved for anyone who's not in the top 32, but has a pro tour win. We've always said that spot will probably never be taken. That doesn't make sense. It could be taken by Parker Welk. He's not playing a lot of pro tours. He just won a pro tour. I haven't looked at the updated pro tour standings, but depending on what the rest of his year looks like, he could be sitting outside that top 32 in MPO and earn his play-in bid with that win. It also means next year he has a tour card, and what the tour card is going to mean going forward is that's going to be really your only way onto the pro tour. So going forward, if you don't have a tour card, you're going to have to like do some local qualifiers or, you know, sponsorship exemption, stuff like that. But like your average Joe Schmo, I can't just go sign up to Ledgestone in a few years, possibly even next year, as they implement this tour card. So earning your tour card is huge. Earning it with your first pro tour win, even bigger. So Parker's response was basically like, yeah, this is life-changing. Now the rest of MPO field, I mean, Ricky was kind of up and down. I expected Ricky to play a little bit better overall. I thought he was going to be a little bit more in contention, but still coming off of, you know, his injury and everything with his wrist. You don't really know what to expect week in and week out. Calvin Heimberg played great, put himself one stroke back of the win when it was all said and done. So that kind of is, I think that's pretty much all my thoughts on DDO. I don't know how long it's supposed to be. Trevor told me about 10 minutes, so I don't know how long I've been rambling for. But final thing I want to say, brief aside to Kona Piste, some things we've been noticing. Paul had a really hot second round, struggled a little bit in the third round, actually struggled a lot of it in the third round. So again, he kind of fell back. We haven't seen Paul put together a full tournament and lose yet over there, but we are seeing some trends of the players that are consistently beating him, consistently performing well out there. And the two ones that I want to highlight, we already kind of knew. One, Nicholas Antola. He won this weekend at Kona Piste. We've already seen him do a lot over here. So no surprise there. The other one, no real surprise. If you've listened to this podcast, we've mentioned his name a lot. Yakub Semirad also performed well at Kona Piste. So those two, I think, are the two emerging trends from the European scene. We'll have to keep an eye on it as Paul's tour and their tour over there continues. We'll have to see if those two are the only two that continue to emerge. But I think those two are the keys coming out of the European field right now. And we'll see if a few other names start getting themselves in the mix consistently like they are. But that wraps up this weekend in disc golf. We'll throw it back to Connor Kennedy with the weather.
All right. Thank you, Hunter, for your incredible insight and just vast amount of knowledge. Shout out for Hunter on vacation providing his takes. I will kind of give my input on what he had to say and then add anything that feels necessary and also update you on a few other subjects in the disc golf world that we're going down this weekend, including Kono Peach Day and some other little announcements before we head into the back end of the show. So, yeah, DDO recap went down. Very iconic event, obviously. I do agree with Hunter on his take, starting with the course. We got to see ECC, that being Emporia Country Club, on full display this weekend with them excluding Jones Supreme because, you know, a lot of players didn't really like it. I do agree that the property, I understand why people don't think it's exciting. Personally, I think ECC is a pretty good course. I think there are some changes that probably should be made to maybe have a little more decision-making involved. I think that the course itself, and I've said this before, can like be disguised almost as a course that looks like it would have a lot of decision-making because of the OB, but really a lot of the player strategies and landing areas, when there's no wind, I should add that in, are pretty similar. So I definitely see that. I think the biggest hit, though, to Emporia and the DDO this year was the gallery. And I, from what I hear, this has had to do with the AM side not being the same weekend, which hurt a lot of the spectators that would have been there playing in that. But either way, it was pretty dismal. It was pretty bad. There just was not a lot of people there to watch. And it's tough because, you know, DDO and Emporia, that's supposed to be like the disc golf capital. But ultimately, Emporia is not a huge city, so you know, it's going to be a tough one. You know, the Pro Tour is going to have to make hard decisions down the line. And they've already done that a few times where they're going to have to decide, okay, even though we've always gone here and this is somewhat iconic to disc golf or tradition to disc golf, is it worth not being able to draw a huge crowd, you know, in the middle of Kansas? So that's certainly going to be something to look at going forward. It is just always a bummer when you have, you know, there's only so many of these tour stops. And when you don't have a really good gallery, it certainly deflates things a bit. Because there was some exciting golf to be cheering for, and we'll get into that right away. FPO recap we'll start with. So we had Haley King taking it down over Holland Hanley in a playoff with Ella Hansen finishing in third, and then Kristen, just to throw her on the map for you in case you're wondering, she was in fourth place, a few strokes off the pace. This was some of the best FPO golf we've seen so far this season. Super, super entertaining. It was truly a battle. Now, there were definitely some hiccups down the stretch from certain players, but it didn't feel like what can happen a lot of times with FPO where it's like, oh, Kristen's just keeping it in bounds and like just waiting for other players to mess up. And then, you know, kind of that same theme. This felt like a real, like, you know, shot exchange. Like, I throw an incredible shot, now the next person throws an incredible shot, like down the wire. It was very exciting. The key to this, this tournament kind of takes place on the back end of this course, which is ultimately, you know, what makes ECC a good course, is like 15 through 18 is an incredible stretch. Now, it all started on 14 was kind of the first notable thing, is Holland Hanley at this point with the lead spits out her birdie putt. And this was something that was getting talked about quite a bit. We actually talked about it on debate night this morning. The whole spit out thing. Holland Hanley had a couple of vicious ones. The one on 14, exceptionally bad. It really was a tough one. And, you know, I think most people will be able to comfortably point to the idea that there was plenty more golf to play and other opportunities for her to win. And that's not what everything culminates to, but it certainly was a bummer to see that. However, she made it up on the very next hole, making a very long birdie putt on 15. So we get to hole 16 the first time with Holland and Haley sort of neck and neck, and Haley parks it, makes birdie, and then Holland misses the island the first time. Not a lot of wind out there at the course, decides to go with like a flatter shot. I guess she probably didn't turn it as much as she wanted to, maybe trying to play kind of that. I think she was trying to play into an overstable disc and throw it flat, which I get because I like that shot, but she was playing it very direct at the pin unless she let it go early, and she ended up being short and missing, taking the bogey, and that kind of swings things. Then We go to 17, tough par four, mostly because of the low ceiling tee shot. Hahn Hanley throws a much better drive than Haley King, but is unable to take advantage of that. Doesn't get up and down for birdie. So now we go into hole 18, which is an incredible. It's an incredible MPO hole 18. I think it's very good for FPO. It's a very weird one, and it kind of takes me to one of my points about the FPO layout at ECC. Seems a little bit like an afterthought, in my opinion. There's just a few holes. Let me give you an example. There is hole 13 is an uphill dogleg par 3, 397 feet. Nobody from the FPO field is reaching that hole. And guess what? It had zero birdies the entire tournament. That is a pretty immediate indicator. I don't know whose idea, like who thought that they were going to be able to reach that hole, but like that's a pretty obvious indicator. Okay, that needs to not be a thing. And in fairness, we've seen ECC make par changes in the past, but like they make some pretty like vicious mistakes sometimes as far as like assigning a par that just they should know isn't right. So nobody could get that hole. But then you have hole 18, which is 417 feet, but it played slightly downhill with no dog leg. So I would argue just objectively a more reachable hole, and they make that a par four. So that's super weird. It's like they actually put that almost on the really soft side. So yeah, I saw a bit of that at this FPO layout in Emporia, where it just seemed like there wasn't a lot of thought into like, is this actually going to play the way it should with par? And like, for instance, hole 13, even if you make that a par four, then it's too easy. Like sometimes holes just need to be changed a certain way, like make the tee pad close enough that it can just play as a true par three. On hole 18, just move it up a little bit if you don't think everybody's going to reach it. Although I think they could have made 18 just a three, a long three, and people would have got it, because that's proven, because 18, Haley steps up, throws it long. You know, there are players that a lot of players can reach this hole, throws it long, just stays in bounds, has about a 30 footer, you know, down kind of facing the water, almost like long left, I guess. And then, you know, Ella reaches, and then Holland parks it. Just so clutch. We saw a new version of Holland Hanley. You know, if you watch the preview show especially, we've kind of doubted Holland Hanley's ability to close down the stretch. And I'll get into that a little bit more, but we saw a new Holland Hanley. Steps up, parks 18, taps out, and makes the eagle. Now Haley has a putt for her eagle and the win. If she is to lay it up, she could take a birdie and go into the playoff. Haley decides to give it a half bid. Now, it was revealed after the fact that Haley King did not know where her score was at the time, which if that is true, and like we've talked about this so many times on debate night, all this and that, but if that is truly the case, if Haley King in a very much circumstantial stretch of holes, like 16, 17, and 18, like a lot of the holes out there at ECC, you need to know where you stand so you can change your strategy. As far as like just laying up a putt, for example, if allegedly she didn't know, which if that's the case, like, I mean, I know she ends up winning, but like, what are we, like, how can, I don't understand that. I'm not going to get into it too much. I'll just get worked up, because that's just insane to me. But in any case, that probably explains her decision to like give it a half run. This is a putt that was like circle's edge and so downhill with the water behind that I would not, a lot of times we get on players for not running putts. And I know Haley is a pretty great putter from that range and was putting well, but I would not have been crazy for her to lay that up. It was a very tough putt, and there was a big threat of going OB if she missed. But I also would have been like, hey, you go if she just ran it hard. But she gives it this half-hearted bid, never had a chance to go in, which is probably the worst thing you could do, either run it or don't. And then, you know, makes the comebacker putt at least. So we go to the playoff, they have an incredible playoff hole. I'm sure you remember from Worlds last year. They go back to 16 over the water, and same old story. Haley throws a hyzer. I think she pulls a little bit, but that's the beauty of throwing a nice overstable disc on hyzer. Ends up skipping pretty close. And then Holland Hanley throws what looks to be the same shot. It might have been a different disc, but a very similar like flat disc approach shot, and just doesn't turn it enough or didn't give it enough height and misses short again, which was just like, and you could not make that mistake in that scenario. It was huge, and that ultimately ends up losing. So very exciting golf down the stretch. But just some specific thoughts that I had, you know, going, starting with Kristen, you know, one of the first things there is like, oh, what happened with Kristen? I think this course, this event from Kristen was kind of what I've said about Kristen before, where, you know, she still was hitting so many fairways. Like, I think she led in fairways hit, but her putting kind of snowballs a little bit when it's not going well. She lost 4 strokes, I think, to Haley's putting, and that ended up being the difference, really, with where she finished. And, you know, this was just a case of a tournament where Kristen's performance, you know, hitting the fairways, still getting circle and regulation, like, not her OB rate wasn't bad either. She played very much her Kristen game. I think her lack of distance, and, you know, she's not, like, she doesn't have no distance, but she's not one of the elite distance throwers. I would argue that that Ella, Holland, and Haley are. I think that caught up to her a little bit, and the putt just wasn't really where it needed to be, and that cost her. But I think Kristen's performance at this event is what gets her the win most of the time. But this just wasn't enough. There was just, for once in FPO, and we don't. It's not like it never happens, but in this case in FPO, there were multiple other players that were all playing well enough to beat that out, to beat out just the, you know, a Kristen performance that wasn't quite a dominant Kristen performance. It was just kind of like the one that gets her over the finish line in first normally. And that was kind of refreshing to see, honestly. You know, it'll definitely be, you know, that's probably a frustrating experience for her, and it'll be interesting to watch going forward. But this is like the FPO that we want to see. Haley King, you know, played absolutely tremendous, it proving to be a very effective player when she can stay in the hunt. I think if you look at this season, she's at her best when she can, like, stay locked in because she's staying on the lead cards. If she has early bad rounds, I think that can hurt. There's a lot of players like that I've noticed in disc golf. But she was first in C1X putting at 92%, which is incredible. She's always had a smooth putt, but this year I think she's really had it clicking. And you can tell that it's just such a putt that she's practiced so much, because it never looks shaky under pressure. It's the same putt. It's so repeatable. It's so smooth. And 92% C1X is excellent. Excellent putting. Gained her 8 strokes on the field. And ultimately, that's what gets it done on tour. So, incredible performance from her. Hawn Hanley, definitely have to talk about. She demonstrated some really clutch putting. You know, hole 15, that putt for birdie after taking that awful spit out on 14 was incredible. She was fourth in C1X putting and first in strokes gained tee to green. This is just one of the crazy things, is like those kind of stat lines, first tee to green and fourth in C1X putting, that almost always gets it done. Even in MPO, FPO, wherever, like there's just some great stats. But what we saw is the top 4 or 5 players in FPO this weekend all were like right at the top in all the statistics. And it just came down to key shots. Like when there's a lot of players that are executing, it came down to some key shots. And that's what gets you onto the top of the podium. And for Holland, that was ultimately 2 island shots. You know, that it was 2 clutch moments. And she didn't, you know, she had a lot of clutch moments in that event, but it still came down to 2 key shots, and Haley executed and she did not. And that was what was the difference. But I saw a different side of Holland, where I'm more confident than ever that she is going to be very successful on tour and win going forward, because I saw her perform in some clutch moments. Missy Gannon was well in that tournament until the final round. Just couldn't. She's kind of struggled in final rounds as of late. Distance was definitely a struggle for her out there, and just struggling to hit the circle in regulation because of that. And then Ella Hansen had a good performance, but still just sabotaged by the putt. Not an awful putting performance from her, but like I said, it just took a lot to win this weekend. One thing I did want to notice, just to finish up with FPO, is hole 17, I thought this was an interesting moment. Hole 17, at this point, obviously, it's still very close. And you've got 3 different competitors, like, making a beat on the water cooler, like, under the tent, waiting to tee off. And I know that Ella and Holland were 2 of them, like, kind of, like, joking around. And Haley King, like, kind of smiles and walks away. Like, it seemed like she was kind of locked in. And she was the one that won. Coincidence? Probably not, but I thought that was a funny shot. It, like, I don't know. I'm starting to see some, like, killer instinct out of Haley King. She seems, like, really locked in those moments that I think a lot of the FPO players, and it's everybody's game is different. A lot of them, like, really try to stay loose, and staying loose is good. But I think there comes a time where it's time to really lock in, and I see that out of Haley now. And I think a lot more players. It's so tough. It's like this balance of, like, especially if you really lock in and put everything into trying to win down the stretch and then don't win, it's so much more damaging than if you kind of just have that, like, almost Paige Pierce of a few years ago attitude of like, you know, we're just out here to have fun. It is what it is. And it's important to be able to embrace that at times. But I think sometimes, you know, you have to get to that level to win on tour these days. But, you know, just my two cents. All right. So moving on to the MPO. MPO Golf, we had a pretty incredible storyline. I'll bring up the full leaderboard, but Parker Welk, I'm sure you've probably never even heard that name before. But he came out of absolutely nowhere to win over Calvin Heimberg, taking down the top player in the world and making for an incredible story. Third place ended up going to a share of third with Evan Smith, Matty O, and Alden Harris. Pretty good performance, especially from Alden Harris. He had a really good event, but just could not put it together in the final round. The pace was pretty intense that final round to stay on pace with Parker and Calvin. This final round really came down to hole 14. At this point, Calvin was still in control. I swear, Ian and Philo, those guys, I know that everybody's tired of hearing this, but those guys are just dying. I swear the way they watch, the way they commentate on disc golf sometimes is like as if they call it, if they say it's over, like they call it for somebody, they get to go home early or something because they're like dying to get to that point, it seems like. They're literally on hole, after hole 13, like trying to call it for Calvin. As if there's not like one of the most difficult finishing stretches because of some of the high pressure shots like to follow. It was, I couldn't believe it. They were like, it's like you've got to see on social media, people talking about that and they still were doing that. But anyways, we'll move away from that. So we get to the very next hole. We get to 14 and Calvin, this is one of the softest holes on the course, par five. And Calvin throws a bad drive out of bounds and then misses a short putt and ends up taking a bogey. Whereas Parker goes ahead and takes the eagle, and that huge swing kind of put him back in the driver's seat. But now we've got this incredible situation where Parker has to clutch up down the stretch on that 16, 17, 18, well, 15 as well, and hold off the number one player in the world. And what does he do? He plays perfect from there on out. Birdies 15, birdie 16 with just an insane line. I know Hunter mentioned this. Throwing an anti-flex, like, nose-up putter, which is just, the guy's oozing confidence at this point. Gets the three on 17, no problem, and then has the luxury of a pretty stress-free par on 18, but threw a really good second shot, drive and second shot on 18 to make sure that was there, because Calvin stayed right there. He only lost by one. You know, Calvin continued to apply the pressure. It wasn't like Calvin choked it away. The whole 14 was very poor from him. You could argue that he kind of, like, gave it up there, but he still finished strong, had a good tournament. It felt like it was Calvin's weekend again, and it was like, oh my gosh, he's going to get another win this early in the season. But Parker Welk came out of nowhere. So if a little bit of info about him, he was well outside the top 100 in the world. He's actually been on tour this year, just hasn't really made any noise, which is even crazier. And he's like in his mid-20s. When I was watching him, I was thinking, oh, here's another like Gannon Burr type one, like another kid, like another Carter Aarons, like here comes another one. They're just everywhere. And then I kind of realize, you know, he's only 10-10 rated. He's been doing disc golf for a while. He's never even won an A tier, I heard. And then just kind of had his weekend. And I think this is very interesting for like what disc golf is going to look like going forward, where our field is so deep at this point that now this is just new precedent for like somebody outside of the top 100 is that good at disc golf that they can have their weekend and beat the best player in the world. Like it's gotten to that point where we have so many good players in that field. And I think that's really cool. And I think if you're somebody else near the bottom of those world rankings down there, that's like confidence right there. Like, oh my gosh, you know, somebody else that was lower in the world rankings was able to do it. It's doable. I'll say this. I don't know what we can expect from Parker Welk going forward, but he certainly has a well-rounded game when it's clicking, it seems. I mean, smash forehand, plenty serviceable backhand, was making, I think he was 4 for 5 on C2 putts that final day in the clutch. So, yeah, there was plenty of skills on display. I'll be interested to see if this win gives him any more confidence, but it was certainly some very exciting golf from Parker, and look forward to seeing him play more on tour, hopefully get on some more lead cards. He now jumps to number 39 in the world. Pretty big leap there. And I did want to get to his post-round interview. I thought was really cool. First of all, he mentioned how like he felt disrespected by his less than 1% on UDisc chance to win, even two back from the lead going into the final day, and that like motivated him, which I loved that. And then Terry, mentioned, like, gave him the props, like, kind of announced him that, like, he would be getting earning his tour card for the next year by getting that win, which was, like, perfect situational interview awareness from Terry to understand that, like, somebody who is not even in the top 100 in the world, one of the biggest things that that win means to him, other than just getting a win, is you just got yourself registration spots on the tour for next season. And that was very good interviewing from Terry. And I love that the Pro Tour chose to highlight something like that, because it's a really, it adds to that story. And it was a really cool storyline. So yeah, two different things going on, FPO and MPO. We got, like, you know, the stars kind of battling out on FPO, a bunch of the fan favorites. And then we got this unknown Parker Welk taking down the world number one in MPO. It was a very exciting event overall. And yeah, just a good time. We will then, before we, you know, hop back into the set with me and Connor, wrap up the show. I want to go over some other things that went down in disc golf. We had Kono Piste Day going down over in Europe. It's a pretty notable event just because that course is pretty famous. But this is on the Euro Tour, and Paul was there. Paul McBeth. We're going to kind of, you know, keep up with his European exploits. But he started off okay, was a few off the pace. Round two comes out, shoots 14 under, sets the course record out of control, and then finishes it up kind of laying an egg round three, shoots two under, ends up losing by 12 to Nicholas Antala. So kind of the Paul McBeth that we've been seeing, or like maybe the kind of like the Paul McBeth we saw last year a lot in events, where it was like there was one round where he was going to do something spectacular, but just not a consistent product. Shout out to Nicholas Antala. Fantastic player. He's been playing really well this season. He is going to be certainly a threat for European Open this year, I think. Yakub Semerad already also kind of towards the top of that leaderboard. But yeah, Paul McBeth, another kind of interesting hiccup on this European tour. It's definitely, you know, he picked up a win in the one event, but it's definitely looking like it's going to be difficult, especially when a lot of these really good players are in the field. Just not the consistency is not there. You know, Paul McBeth shooting course record in the second round tells us that he is still very capable, but there's just not that consistency, and that'll just be interesting to follow. Speaking of, and the crazy thing is, I'll mention, is that Paul's putting is what's letting him down. C1X putting, and that just doesn't compute with me as somebody who's followed his whole career. It's just crazy that he's not making putts in C1X, because that's just not what I'm used to. Another thing kind of out of the sort of European news, if you're not familiar with the European Open, they do a President's Cup each year. And the teams have been announced now, so I wanted to go into that. Team USA and then Team Europe, and they do kind of like a match play and a stroke play, and then they combine points or whatever. And I think these teams are actually very interesting because they're based, a lot of the players are based off of year-end rankings from last year. So it's almost going to sound like a blast from the past. Even though all these players are recognizable, it's like if you were to pick these teams this year, it would look a lot different. So Team USA captain is Nate Sexton. That's chosen by the PDGA and Spin 18, which is the company that helps put on the European Open. So that's, you know, what it is, what it is. That's kind of like a, I don't know, almost ceremonial position, you know, Nate Sexton being the captain. Then you have Katrina Allen, Missy Gannon, already two FPO players that I probably wouldn't have picked if I were picking right now. Gannon Burr makes sense. Paul McBeth, Eagle McMahon, Ricky Wysocki. And then you're going to have a fan's choice player, a captain's choice player, and then the reserves are Paige Pierce and Calvin Heimberg. So it's very interesting that, like, based on the rankings last year, there's quite a few players that squeeze in there that probably wouldn't, such as Paul, you know, even like players being favored over Calvin for those spots. It's very interesting. Obviously, you know, Eagle might not be able to play with his injury. You know, we'll see what ends up happening if things shift around. But the European team, you have captain Carl Johan Nybo. KJ Nybo is how he is normally known. And then you got Henna Blomros, Kristen Tatar, Nicholas Antala, Linus Carlson, Vino Makala, Lori Lettinen, and then a fan's choice player and a captain's choice player. That list sounds about right. That team's going to be pretty formidable, honestly. It really will be. But those are the President's Cup team that goes down, I believe, just before the European Open, which is somewhat steadily approaching. But yeah, that's kind of everything that went down this weekend in disc golf. Hopefully Hunter and I's takes sufficed. It's kind of just a style. We decided to do the podcast this week since he's away. And yeah, hopefully I covered everything. We will hop back into the podcast now, finish up with some Trevor's trivia. We're back.
All right,
if Trevor, you watch just Hunter's take and not mine, why did you do that?
If you watch just Trevor's take and not Hunter's, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments. If you watch just my take, then let me know where you found it, because yeah, I did not know it was there.
There you go. Yeah. We recorded when you weren't looking.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap up now with Little Trevor's trivia. I've got a very exciting trivia game today.
I'm very excited and very nervous. I get nervous before every Trevor's
trivia. There's nothing to be nervous about.
Okay.
So what I did was I told ChatGPT, the AI program, to describe certain disc golfers to me.
And I'm going to fun.
I'm going to read the descriptions that they gave me.
Okay.
And see if you can guess who they are. See if ChatGPT knows disc golf well enough. This is how I would phrase it. I'll just throw in a player name as an example. I would say, describe professional disc golfer Andrew Marweed to me, like as an example.
Okay.
And then they give me like five paragraphs.
Okay. And is it going to be like, they won this, they won this?
Or I will
is it
substitute be like- the names. I will like say like, you'll see. I'm just going to read what they wrote.
I'm very excited.
So I got two of these. I'll just say like...
Dude, Trevor's Trivia AI edition?
I'll just say like this disc golfer instead of the name.
You hit me with it.
Okay. This disc golfer is a prominent professional disc golfer. Well, that's... known for his powerful throws, creative shot making, and charismatic personality.
It's Simon Lazat.
It's not. Why did you... It's not... There's a four paragraph.
Creative throws, charismatic personality.
I can't stand when people guess that early.
I'm sorry.
I've got a whole thing to read.
You're right. That was very disrespectful of me, and I'm very sorry.
Even if you had guessed right, you would have just defeated the game.
You're right. You're right. You were correct, and I'm sorry.
We're fighting now.
No. I give up. I bend to you.
Okay, thank you. This disc golfer is known for his incredible distance off the tee, often displaying tremendous power in his drives. His ability to generate significant speed and distance has earned him a reputation as one of the longest throwers in the sport. This strength allows him to attack challenging fairways and reach baskets with fewer throws. Now, hold on a second. In addition to his powerful drives, this golfer possesses a diverse skill set and an imaginative approach to the game. He has a repertoire of unique shot selections and execute them with precision. This golfer's creativity also comes into play during difficult situations where he finds unconventional lines or executes... It sounds like Simon. Unconventional lines or executes daring shots to navigate obstacles. While this golfer's strong suits lie in his distance and shot-making abilities, he also has shown improvement in the putting game over the years. Mm. He has worked on refining his technique and developing consistency, which has led to notable improvements in its overall performance. Off the course... This golfer is known for his enthusiastic and outgoing personality. He embraces the disc golf community and enjoys engaging with fans, often interacting with them through social media platforms. This golfer's charisma and positive attitude have made him a popular figure amongst players and spectators alike. Although he has yet to secure a world championship, this golfer has achieved significant success in their career. He has won several notable tournaments and consistently finishes near the top in major events. His dedication to sport combined with natural talent positions him as a formidable competitor and a rising star in the disc golf world.
First of all, I would like to apologize because you're right. You had a lot left to read, and I would have ruined it.
I cut out a couple paragraphs.
Second of all, I believe I'm fairly confident just with how they went into the off the course and interacting. So I think it's Gannon Burr.
Mm-mm.
It's Eagle.
Mm-mm.
Okay, just do I keep guessing?
Sure.
I hear big power. I think Garrett Gerthy, but I don't think of him as a social presence.
There's a couple key lines here that I'll read to you that I think like nail this player.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So now you're trying. Yeah.
Also
now,
shown improvement in his putting game over the years is big, and then definitely engaging with fans, often interacting with them through social media platforms.
It's Brody Smith.
No.
Dang it.
Has he won several big events?
Oh, you're right. You're right.
That's also important.
Right. And consistently finishes near the top.
I wouldn't. That is a little misleading. Not these days, right? Not at the moment.
Okay.
That's misleading. That was very tough because that is a little misleading.
Dang, it really feels like the social presence. I don't think of Ricky as like
this is a player you've met in real life.
That's even. Is it James Conrad?
Mm-mm.
We filmed
with this player.
Is it Ezra Aderholt?
Nope. I can't believe you're gonna.
Is it David Wiggins?
No. I think you're seriously going to be like, how did I not guess that? We filmed with this player at USDGC.
Oh, it's Drew Gibson.
Yeah.
Ah, that makes sense. You see it now? That makes a lot. Yeah, he's big bomber. He's that makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense.
Okay.
Okay.
Now we're gonna move on.
That was tough. It described a lot of disc golfers in there. It did. But the social presence,
it definitely like at first
that makes a lot of sense.
At first I was kinda like, okay, you get that he throws far, but then it was like working on the putting. And yeah. Then it was like the social media thing. That's all I said was describe Drew Gibson to me.
Yeah, he's very interactive on all social media. That's all right, very good.
So this is going to be an FPO player. This is our second one. This is the last one here. Okay. This golfer is a highly skilled and accomplished... I haven't read this one, I don't think. This golfer is a highly skilled and accomplished professional disc golfer known for her exceptional consistency, fierce competitiveness, and strong mental game. Born on July 7th, 1989 in Pipestone, Minnesota... This golfer has established herself as one of the top female players in the sport. This golfer's game is characterized by her impressive accuracy, controlled throws, and strategic shot selection. She possesses a strong forehand and backhand, allowing her to execute a wide range of shots with precision. Her consistent and calculated approach to the game often results in accurate drives, precise mid-range shots, and confident putting. Throughout her career, Throughout her career, this golfer has achieved numerous accolades and titles. She is a two-time PDGA World Champion. Additionally, she has claimed multiple national tour victories and has consistently been a contender in major disc golf events. Beyond her technical skills, this golfer is known for unwavering mental strength and determination on the course. She has showcased ability to perform under pressure and maintain focus during challenging rounds. Her resilience and competitive spirit make her a formidable opponent, often pushing her to make comebacks and secure crucial victories. This is epic. Off the course, this golfer is respected for her professionalism, dedication, and sportsmanship. She actively engages with fans, provides insights into her training routines, and encourages participation in disc golf through various outreach initiatives. This golfer's passion for the sport extends beyond her personal achievements as she strives to elevate the profile of women's disc golf and inspire future generations of players.
I think it's Katrina Allen.
Correct. You're correct.
I mean, it said that she won a lot.
She won two world titles.
Yeah. Also emphasis on the professionalism.
Yeah. It did a good job.
I felt once I got Katrina Allen in my head, everything sounded right.
I was.
She's also been a more consistent putter.
Yeah. I was blown away by the skill in which it subtly captured those players that I told you to describe.
I don't understand how it did that. I don't understand how it knows personalities.
Yeah.
That makes me uncomfortable and I don't get it and I'm scared.
I'm definitely gonna have to do that one again whenever Hunter is back to see what he's able to do with it.
You should get it to describe him.
Hold on a second. I don't know if I can use it on my phone. That would be. I'm gonna save that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna save that. All right. Anyways,
ChatGPT is crazy. It scares me a lot. It's crazy. I'm afraid of it.
I'm really glad it didn't exist when I was in school. I don't think I would have learned anything.
Yeah, I definitely would have.
Yeah, it's useful. Anyways, that was this episode of Grip Locked. Thanks again for listening. Hopefully, let us know if you like this kind of format. I don't even say if you prefer it. If you thought it was okay, just because it is a lot easier for us to do it this way. Whenever somebody's gone, obviously we're not going to normally do this. But if you absolutely hated it, if you're like that was the worst thing ever, let us know. Please be nice in the comments. Other than that, we will see you. We will have a preview show for the Des Moines event coming up. So stay tuned for that. But we'll see you back next Monday with another episode of Grip Lock. See you then.